next item on the agenda is NASA permit number 10-2003. Mr. Badger.
I did have a conversation with Mr. Holland last week, and he authorized me with all the authorization powers that he has that I can vote for him today. NASA requests authorization to extend their existing Wallace Island Rock seawall 4,600 feet to the south and place approximately 3,199,000 cubic yards of sand along 19,400 linear feet of their shoreline, extending the beach east a maximum of 240 feet beyond the seawall, with a total impact to both the existing beach and submerged lands of 550 feet beyond the seawall. The sand for the project will be dredged from deposits in the Atlantic Ocean beyond the Virginia's three-mile territorial limit and will be pumped to the beach from near-shore anchorage pump-out stations located approximately between the 28- and 32-foot contour east of Wallops Island in the Atlantic Ocean. The project is protested by a nearby property owner, and both coastal primary sand dunes slash beaches and submerged lands permits are required. This is just a view of the Eastern Shore. Wallops Island Flight Facility is in the northeast corner of Accomack County. This general area here, Chincoteague is here, and of course Chesapeake Bay. Wallops Island Flight Facility consists of two areas, the main base, which is on the mainland, which is over in here, and then Wallops Island base itself. The island is bounded on the north by Chincoteague Inlet, Atlantic Ocean, and Assawoman Inlet is closed down at this time. And the shoreline is protected by a combination of a stone revetment in the middle, and to the southern end is geotextile tubes, and the long-term erosion rate along Wallops Island and Assawoman Island is somewhere between 14 and 17 feet. NASA predicts an erosion rate of between 9 and 11 feet per year on their shoreline in front of their project. The sand deposits will come from two unnamed shoals, A and B, and they're approximately 7 miles and 11 miles offshore of Assateague Island. And since they're beyond the three-mile territorial limit, no authorization is required for the dredging of or mining of these shoals from the Marine Resources Commission. As you can see, the ocean has encroached substantially towards the launch pads, infrastructure, and the test and training facilities belonging to NASA, the Navy, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, MARS. At the present time, the MARS, I believe, is the launch pad B, is approximately 200 feet from the high water mark. And there's a drone runway that's just south of this that will show up in some of the other pictures, which is even in greater danger than the launch pad itself. And you can see the Aegis facility at the north and the existing seawall coming down. And the new seawall will tie in here and continue on down 4,600 feet when it's completed. And the nourishment will go offshore from here, 250 beach, and then another 250 or approximately 300 feet of submerged lands. And NASA and MARS are currently constructing new facilities on Wallace Island to support launching of orbital rockets that will carry payloads to the International Space Station. This will begin this year. And this is my rendition of what they're proposing. Three million 199 cubic yards of sand material in front of the existing riprap. What you see here in blue is the total seawall of 4,600, and the initial portion of the seawall, which they do have funding for, which is 1,430 feet, which is here with the little return wall here. Again, the nourishment is over 3.7 miles long. and the nourishment will stop or start 1,500 feet north of the property line with Fish and Wildlife on Assawoman Island. NASA has completed the final programmatic environmental impact statement, PEIS, for the proposed shoreline restoration and infrastructure protection program, SRIPP. Alternative one was the preferred alternative and involves a seawall extension and full beach nourishment, which is what you see here. And that was chosen over two other alternatives. Alternative two, which is here in blue, would have been the, in yellow, the seawall and nourishment with a terminal growing here. And alternative three would have been, again, the seawall, the nourishment, and a offshore breakwater. Alternative one was found to have less environmental impacts to the adjacent property and submerged lands, and that's why it's the preferred alternative, and that's why it's here in front of you today. Again, a little closer view. In yellow is the proposed seawall, and it stops about 1,500 feet from the old Assawoman Inlet and property line. The County of Accomack has not yet adopted the coastal sand dune, primary sand dune and beach ordinance. As a result, the commission is responsible for administering the provisions of the ordinance within the locality, so you're also acting as the dunes board in this case. The two adjacent islands, Assawoman here and Assateague, are owned by Fish and Wildlife, and Lou Hines, who's the refuge manager, states that they do not object to the project as proposed. Their approval is predicated upon the completion of the initial 1,430-foot-long portion of the seawall and the beach fill starting 1,500 feet north of the Wallops Island, Assawoman Island property line and extending the full 3.7 miles. Mr. Hines states that the beach fill in combination with the extension of the seawall is critical to the integrity of the Fish and Wildlife property. He also has no objection to the incremental seawall extension to the maximum length of 4,600 feet provided the beach profile is maintained in accordance with the project design. Additionally, he states that it is imperative that monitoring as described on pages 372 and 378 of the final PEIS be undertaken. Department of Game and Inland Fisheries states they do not fully support any of the alternatives since they believe the project will likely result in the adverse impacts to wildlife or the resources on which they depend. They also, however, agree with the selection of alternative one as the preferred alternative since the installation of the jetty has been removed. The jetty would have reduced the southern transport of sand and thereby adverse impacting the islands to the south. Department of Conservation and Recreation documented the existence of a piping plover and Wilson plovers and recommends coordinating with Game and Inland Fish and Fish and Wildlife. Alternative one is DCR's preferred alternative, but they recommend the post seawall extension be limited to the minimum length necessary to protect the facility. They also continue to recommend exploring the feasibility of inland relocation of the existing facility. What I wanted to show here this map is pretty good at showing the endangered species areas. You have piping plover habitat here in orange and a little bit here. In both cases, they're beyond the limits of this project. They found some plover nesting areas in 2009. These little dots here, three of them there. And they actually had one loggerhead turtle nest site 2008 right there. In all cases, they're beyond the limits of this project. Them states that in addition to the proposed beach fill and seawall extension, there will be temporary impacts that will occur from the two Scott buoys anchors located offshore. The temporary impact to the submerged land will occur from the pipelines between the buoys and the beach placement areas. They also state that the remaining geotubes that have failed should be removed or replaced to avoid the old material from becoming waste and affecting the adjacent natural areas. VIMS agrees with NASA's proposal to coordinate with Fish and Wildlife and DGIF to develop a plan of action to address nest sites found within or adjacent to the construction area prior to construction, conducting work on the Wallops Island beach during birding or sea turtle nesting season. And they also recommend that VMRC be informed of such plans and that the monitoring should be performed as described on pages 372 through 378 in the final PEIS, with copies of reports sent to VMRC. And they finally recommend that VMRC should be notified of the beginning and the conclusions of each phase of project activity. So what would happen here is once they mine it, the ships will come in here to a buoy, and from here will be pumped onto the shore. The project is protested by Mr. Paul Rochmus. Mr. Rochmus owns a home on Gargantha Creek and has concerns that the project will impact Gargantha Inlet and the wetlands it serves. He believes the commission should hold NASA responsible if Gargantha Inlet becomes restricted. It's going to be difficult to see, but this is Gargantha Inlet right down here. I believe he must live in a subdivision that's up here in Gargantha Creek, and this is his only way access to the Atlantic Ocean. As you can see, it's 3.6 miles south of the end of the project. This area has changed on its own drastically through the years. Matter of fact, the southern end of Assawoman Island is now the north end of Metomkin Island. So Fish and Wildlife actually owns the north end of Metomkin Island. So the inlet has changed in the past. I've got a few shots in here that were taken prior to the fall 2009 nor'easters, just to show you what it looked like. The geotubes on the southern end were placed here for temporary protection of the Mars pad and the drone runway here. And in some of these other pictures, you'll see the camera station and some shots here of what's happened after the nor'easter came through. The next shot will be, I believe, taken from the Mars pad itself, right after the nor'easter in 2009. There's the runway right there. And you can see the geotubes, how they've broken up. Again, this is in November of 2009 after the nor'easter. Geotubes, the Mars southern launch pad, just broken up. Lost the house. One of the buildings right here is lost. Again, the new seawall will start right here where the return wall of the existing seawall comes and comes down in front, pretty much in line. The geotubes are going to be a little bit farther east, and the initial 1,430 feet will stop somewhere in here, and then a return wall will kick back here. This is just an overview, just to give you an understanding of what the fill, magnitude of this project. It's huge. Sand fill, submerged lands, 211.3 acres. Intertidal, 16.9. And above mean high water, 22.8. And the stone itself, there's only one little section that's actually going to be channel water below, and that's in the transition area between the existing riprap and trying to move it back towards tie into the existing revetment or bank. A little closer view. Here's the existing riprap here, Mars pad, the dark area is the proposed riprap, and offshore, a little lighter color through here, is the nourishment. It's a continuation all the way up to the end of the existing riprap here. Again, this is the transition area between the existing and the cutback. They didn't want to come back at 90 degrees on the Atlantic Ocean. It's obviously going to be a pressure point and have some issues there, so they're transitioning less of an angle. And the seawall will impact 0.39 acres of submerged lands. Cross section, new seawall, 240 feet from the seawall out, and then approximately another 310 feet of submerged lands for a total, or maximum total anyway, of 550 feet from the seawall. The height of the seawall will be approximately 14.8 feet above mean low water. And I don't, Lou, these pictures are fairly dark. Could you cut the lights right behind you? No, I think it's right behind you.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you. This is right after the storm, and you can see what's happened here. All the geotubes, or a good portion of them, were torn up. The building was destroyed. Again, a little closer view. You can see how close the Mars station or launch pad is. This is one of those parking pads off to the side of the drone runway that the bulkhead had failed around that. And this is one of the few areas on the southern end that the geotexial tubes stayed in place. And this is on the very southern end, showing the camera station, which was about to be eroded away. Thank you. And just a couple more pictures, again, looking north. And looking south, you can see that there's the camera station that was after, these were probably taken in 08, 07. The erosion is all the way back here. And of course, this was not there. Thank you. Going to just put one of these back up. Find another one that's better. I'll be happy to put it there. Let's see. This basically shows all of the project as it exists. Summary and recommendation. Sand from the project will be dredged from the two unnamed shoals, deposits A and B, approximately 7 miles and 11 miles east of Assateague Island in the Atlantic Ocean and beyond Virginia's 3-mile territorial limit. Therefore, no authorization is required from the Marine Resources for this portion of the project. Staff has discussed Mr. Rochemus's concerns with NASA. They state that because of the continuing growth of Fishing Point, which is on Assateague, along with the southwestern migration of the offshore shoals, there is less sand transport to the south along Wallops Island, and in most cases, the net sediment transport is to the north along this entire project now. They also state that their modeling indicates the impact from the nourishment would most likely be contained within the area within 2 miles of the project. Again, Garth Inlet is more than 3.6 miles south of the southern end of the proposed project. Staff, therefore, does not believe the project will impact the inlet any more than what is already being impacted by natural processes near the inlet. NASA has completed the final environmental impact statement for the proposed shoreline restoration and infrastructure protection program. The environmental impact statement evaluated the potential environmental impacts from the proposed NASA Wallops Flight Facility. The SRIPP encompasses a 50-year planning horizon and is intended to reduce damage to federal and state infrastructure on Wallops Island caused by the combination of sea level rise and coastal storms. After numerous meetings with state and federal agencies and multiple public hearings on alternatives to the project, to protect the project's infrastructure on Wallops Island with the least amount of environmental impact, alternative one was submitted. Since both VIMS and Fish and Wildlife had concerns with the beach fill in combination with the extension of the seawall, is critical to the integrity of Fish and Wildlife property, staff discussed the matter with the applicant. The applicant states that they have the funding to start in May to install the first 1,430 linear feet of seawall, which will protect the southern launch pad, with a completion date of November 2011. They also state that the funding is in place to install the entire 19,400 linear feet of beach fill starting in November or December of this year. The beach fill will take approximately 6 to 9 months. Therefore, staff believes the timetable proposed by NASA meets the requirements requested by both VIMS and Fish and Wildlife. The applicant has agreed to the monitoring as stated in the final environmental impact statement, Chapter 5, Mitigation and Monitoring, pages. And I have this wrong. I had 365. It should have been 372 through 378 as requested by Fish and Wildlife, DCR, Game and Inland Fish, and VIMS. This includes the monitoring of threatened and endangered species, piping plovers and sea turtles, and conducting post-construction beach profile monitoring surveys. Therefore, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all the factors contained in 28.2.1403 and 28.2.1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends approval of the project as submitted, conditioned on the removal of the remaining geotubes that have deflated or failed, notification of the commencement and conclusion of each phase of the project activity, submittal of all post-construction beach profile monitoring surveys. Staff also recommends that Chapter 5 of the final PEIS mitigation and monitoring pages, again, instead of 365, it should have been 372 to 378, be made part of the permit. And we have representatives from NASA here to answer, thank you. I hope, most of the questions.
Any questions?
Yeah. You stated that the erosion factor after the project's completed would be contained within about 2 miles of the project. Now, what if the erosion during monitoring, they're going to monitor the grade of the beach? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And now, what if erosion occurs faster than they anticipated? Is there some type of plan project as far as replenishment or containment or backup plan?
I think I'm going to ask them on the construction aspect of it. This is an ongoing project, so the way it's stated right now, it's on an as-needed nourishment, and they're expecting to have to re-nourish this about every 5 years. And it will not be to this extent, obviously.
Right,
it will be
because it'll have some right. basis, but right. okay.
Anyone else? Mr. Plummer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had a question. You mentioned, I'm looking at alternative one, and did you state that the rock jetty is removed from alternative one and that's no longer part of this to be considered? Okay. So your recommendation is without the jetty?
Yes. And that was actually alternative two, I believe. Maybe I misspoke. I must have misspoke.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Tanker?
Yeah, my question is with regard to the modeling that would show that it's only a 2 mile area of erosion or sand accretion. Where do they get that modeling from? Where's the experience? It seems that there are two dynamics going on, the breakwater, the rock breakwater, and the sand, and together they probably have an effect that by themselves would not be the same, but together it's got to be greater. Do you have any
I'm assuming the effect is better.
The effect is better.
Together. If you just have a revetment of any type, you're going to pass erosion quicker to the scythe or whatever the predominant direction is. With the nourishment, that's going to stop some of that. Now, as far as how far north or south the effects will be felt, we had some concerns about that, and NASA has got a letter in your packet that states some of the reasons behind it. But I believe a lot of that was done by modeling from the Army Corps, wasn't it?
Yes, we hired the Army Corps.
Yes. But yeah, they can explain what the modeling was, but it came through the Army Corps and their expertise. And I believe it was also a independent study that was part of it, too. Yes.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you. Is the applicant represented?
Yes. Paul Holt.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Help you God. Proceed.
I was just going to answer questions that you might have. I had a short presentation.
Please, please state your name.
My name is Paul Bull. I'm a project manager for NASA. I had a short presentation, but we're having computer issues, but I can answer any questions you might have about the project.
Some of the questions that Hank wasn't able to answer. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. Could you comment on the monitoring that's envisioned as it relates to the potential migration of sand to the south?
Yeah, what's going to happen is after we place this beach, we're going to do pre-monitoring. We're going to pre-project, basically. We're working with the Corps. We have a contract with a local firm, A&E firm out of Salisbury, Maryland, who has several partners, and they're going to monitor the beach, basically take survey measurements and do a flight with LIDAR to try to take images of what's going on right now. And then twice a year after we build the beach, we're going to go out there in the spring and then the fall to monitor what's going on the beach to try to predict better. We expect every 3 to 7 years we have to put about 800,000 cubic yards of sand back on the beach to keep where it is. But that could vary based on the severity of storms. It could be less, it could be more. 5 years is the nominal figure we're using.
Thank you.
Mr. Tanker.
And so would you tell us a little bit more about the modeling and where that sand will go that you'll need to replace?
I'll start by telling you the work was done at the Corps office here in Norfolk, but the modeling was done out of the Engineering Research Development Center in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Dr. King from Vicksburg did the modeling, and I will speak a little bit further about what Hank was saying. We had Vicksburg folks do the modeling for us through the Corps, and we had a team of four professors, one of which is a coastal geologist, three coastal geologists, and one a coastal engineer that from the University of Florida that looked over our shoulder and looked over the modeling to make sure what we were doing was correct. The modeling basically predicts what's going to happen. They use Genesis and a few other models. I want to ask Mark Hudgens to come here and talk more about the modeling for me from the Corps. But what happens basically is the farther we get away from the project, the less impact there's going to be. It's just the amplitude of the impact goes less and less and less. It's like a spring. The farther away from it, the less energy you're going to have. Mark, you want to explain a little better about the modeling?
Sure.
Please go forward. Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, told truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do. My name is Mark Hudgens, the Corps of Engineers in Norfolk. Basically, we had two models, numerical models, that we ran for the shoreline here. The first model was Genesis model, which is a general shoreline change model. It's a long-term, we modeled a 50-year lifespan, and that's how we came up with the 3 to 5 year renourishment cycle. The model domain basically went from north of Chincoteague Inlet down past, I think, to Gargathy Inlet. So it was a large model domain. It's based on synthetic wave conditions that were generated. The other model was a short-term storm-induced model, S beach, where that's how we came up with the widths of the beach and the elevation of the beach to provide the protection that we need. Okay.
And so sand transport, where will all the sand go to?
Very good question. When we got into, initially, we had the impression that the transport was to the south. When we got into the modeling, there's a zone, basically. And
without, you know, the zone basically is to the south of the NASA property up to about where the seawall ends. So it really depends on the wave climate as to the direction of the transport. Basically, from the Mars launch to the north, it basically goes to the north where you can see the... Can we get to the slide?
Because there's a spit up north.
That's a good one. This right here is increasing it exponentially, causing a shadow zone, which really this is exponentially increasing as well. So that's growing. So the transport was to the north here. And then there's some evidence with the wave modeling that there's transport to the south. So there's really a zone in here, that nodal zone.
Anyone else? Mr. Plumley.
I had a question about the any previous sand replenishment at this location, if there had ever been done.
Well, the answer is really no. We had a practice, I guess you would call it, put about 60,000 cubic yards or so, 60,000 to 80,000 cubic yards from the dredging of Chincoteague Inlet on a part of our seawall. However, that stuff is very fine, not coarse enough to hold, so it didn't last 3 to 6 months or so. It was very silty. So we paid the delta for them to dispose it, instead of disposing it out in the ocean, dispose it in front of us, and just to see what would happen. Nothing really, it didn't stick really.
Yeah, it was a maintenance material out of Chincoteague Inlet, and it was placed as close as we could along the shoreline here, and it was very fine material, and it just flattened out. It wasn't really a test case.
With the amount of sand replenishment that's proposed, what is the storm event that this is anticipated to protect the facility from with the increased size of the seawall and the sand?
The two combined are expected to prevent from a 100-year storm event.
The combined meaning the seawall and the beach, the dune and the berm combination. The width of it will look a lot like the resort strip at Virginia Beach. That's the magnitude that we're talking about.
Mr. Fowle.
Yes. With all the economic difficulties that the country has right now, this facility is very important to NASA. But is there any risk that we will approve this project, y'all will do it, and then for some reason the Wallops Island facility will be closed and...
Kind of hard to answer. There's always a risk, yeah, what's going on in government today. Well, let me show you. I would like to put one slide on here to kind of show you. I don't have the exact presentation I was going to use here today, but I'm going to show you a slide that kind of shows you why we believe the money we're spending here is certainly going to be worthwhile. Where is it, Josh?
Of the wallflowers.
Beach music.
Look at all that.
Boston.
Your stick, buddy. Yeah, drop a little bit.
Presentation.
I'm showing you a presentation we gave to our headquarters folks, kind of highlight what we're trying to protect here. Hank talked about it a little bit, but let me make this work. Kind of going off the page a little bit. This is a more updated slide. Turn the picture. The lights off might show a little better. A little updated slide. This is from November of this year, so it's not too old.
here's the current value of assets on Wallops Island. We've got NASA has about $170 million worth of assets. Navy has about $70 million plus $800 million in outfitting. That's the Navy. Mars, that's a low number. That's really around 13 for their existing pad 0B, which is here to the south. Total about $1.1 billion of assets there on the beach at Wallops Island. It supports approximately, between the Navy and NASA, every year about $100 million worth of annual programs. Now, here's the new stuff, and I'll point out the new stuff. The new stuff is here in the distance is the HIF, horizontal integration facilities, two large hangar doors. They'll be able to process Taurus II rockets or anybody else's rockets for that matter. It's a Navy NASA facility. Simultaneously, two rockets will be processed simultaneously. This is Pad 0A. This is the State of Virginia, Mars, Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, really, facility. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 to $80 million worth of liquid fueling, and there's a water tower, and here's the launch complex. There's a launch pad right here, really. So this is the new launch infrastructure investment that we've had just recently based on this Taurus II, which I'll talk a little bit about. $26 million from the state of Virginia, $51 million from the federal government side, private sector about $23 million. So you've got $100 million of new assets in addition to the $170 million. All of this really supporting the big issue is the nearly $2 billion program that has been awarded to Orbital Sciences in Sterling, Virginia to conduct a CRS mission, eight missions really to resupply the space station, which once the shuttle retires, we have no U.S. flagged way to get there. If there's anything else interesting on here, Josh, do you? Who else we have? This is that's a little bit about what some of the stuff we've done. I kind of give you a little more background more than Hank, Mr. Badger gave you. Corps of Engineers, we've been doing this. I have been involved with this since 2005 or six. So I could probably close my eyes and tell you what the slide says. Corps of Engineers has been working with us since 06, really, but in 08 they developed about 54 alternatives for us to look at. It was a product of extensive research. We had done a lot of analysis at NASA looking at the beach at Wallops. Never really did much about it other than look at it and say, yes, a problem. We need to do something about it. We reduced those alternatives to three based on initial cost of the project, ability to protect against a 100-year storm event, which I mentioned earlier, and the annual maintenance cost to NASA once it's completed. We developed three alternatives, which is discussed earlier. We had a beach fill alternative, a beach fill and groin alternative. We call it a groin, not a jetty. Two distinct items, beach fill and detached breakwater. As we've discussed here before, we have a preferred alternative for beach fill only, about 1,420 some odd feet of seawall extension. We'll put pad 0B behind a seawall and about 3.2 million cubic yards. What I mentioned earlier is we had four university professors. We knew we were going to take a lot of flack for this project. We're going to have to make sure we were right, and then once we were right, check it again. So we got an independent technical review team, four professors, three of them, I believe, had experience with this area. They worked with VIMS, they worked with other folks in the area doing research. And one of which is, like I mentioned before, three of them, two from UVA, one from FIRM, and one from University of Florida. A gentleman from University of Florida, Bob Dean, Dr. Dean, is recognized in his field as being one of the fathers of coastal engineering. So we had people we thought were pretty high profile to make sure to look over our shoulders and advise us what we're doing. A little interesting shot of, this is a shot of the whole beach, Wallops Island. This is what we're going to be doing. Phase one, you can't make it out. I can tell you what it says, though. This is phase one. This is the extension to get pad 0B protected from a seawall standpoint. And then beyond that, it's phase two, is this yellow beach sand. That'll be basically, this is the construction fill template for the beach. We talked about sand resources quickly. We talked a little bit about the EIS. The EIS was a 24-month process. We had over 400 comments that we responded to. We conducted two public meetings and had a stakeholder meeting beyond that as well. Some things that changed based on the EIS, we were going to Blackfish Bank to get our sand first. But we had public comment, and we had some additional modeling that we paid to do to find out if we stayed here and took sand off of Blackfish Bank. Number one, public didn't like it. Number two, over the 50-year life of this project, with us continually going back to Blackfish Bank, we'd eventually put some issues out here on Assateague Island, which we didn't want to do. So now, as you see, we're going to unnamed Shoal A to get our sand. This is a lot of the environmental stuff, probably more than you want to know, but we went through all these Section 7, Section 106, Coastal Zone Management Act, Central Fish Habitat. We have met with everybody. We've actually cleared these issues up now with Clean Water Act, VDEQ, and CORE. We've done our 106 consultation for pump-out buoys with VDHR, and we're working with BOMAR, used to be MMS, to get our sand leased now by May 1st, hopefully. That's about it. Turn lights back on. Any other additional questions?
I had one follow-up. I didn't see any of the staging having any impact with regard. It's all offshore staging for, you know, sand replenishment and for the seawall construction. There's no use of the sound side wetlands or anything like that for staging of this.
No use of wetlands for staging. No, we have some rock resources already on the island. Approximately, I'm going to guess at it, somewhere around here, but not on wetlands, they're on uplands. And there's no staging, basically, very little staging onshore for the beach activity other than the men and the equipment needed to push sand around once it comes on the beach.
Mr. Schitt?
You said funding's in place. Does that mean it's in your hands or it's been appropriated?
We have three fiscal years of funding. Our fiscal year begins October 1st. We have FY10 funding, which is actually at the core already, to do the extension. And there'll be some remainder of that funds that will be paired with FY11 funds. That's this year's money, which we don't have yet, but it's coming once Congress gets themselves straight. And then 12 money as well. All has been approved through NASA. NASA headquarters has what's called a construction of facilities budget. Mm-hmm. It's a budget that all centers, the 13 centers and two major sites, argue for 2 years hence. So we've already secured funding for this project. This project actually was rated as the number one project for NASA facilities in the agency.
Well, it sounds like the fact that this is going to be the only way that the country can get to the International Space Station. Puts it up in the higher priority range. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Any other question? Thank you. Anyone here wants to speak in support of the project? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none, the matter before the commission.
I move that we approve it as staff recommends.
Well, probably the only member of the commission who has actually landed an airplane at Wallops Island, I will second that.
Any other discussion?
One question, Mr. Chairman, just for the maker of the motion. Does that include the conditions specified in the staff recommendation?
Yes, that's staff recommend.
Thanks for the clarification.
Any more discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, motion carries unanimous. Thank you all for coming.